Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. We're glad you joined us. I'm Mitch Lawrence in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Darren Bunch is out there in California. And Darren, I dare say we've had a lot of people, a lot of guests on the show, but I don't think either of us can be more excited than we are today to have the special guest that we have in Jason Connery.
Oh boy, we're going to talk about a movie that we've both got to see the press screener on and just really enjoyed. It's called Tommy's Honor. A great movie about the history of the game. And as both of us being Hickory players, we absolutely love the history of the game. And so this is going to be a fun conversation.
We are glad you found us on golfnewsnet.com, on iTunes, on Audio Boom and Stitcher. Darren, you can find on social media at Getaways Golf on Twitter, at Golf Getaways on Instagram. You can find me on both at Mitch Lawrence, Laurance. And let us get right to it. We are, as we said, honored and grateful to be joined today by Jason Connery. We're going to talk about Tommy's Honor, and Jason was the director on that film about the life and times of old and young Tom Morris. It's set to open this week across America. It's already won the British Academy Scotland Award for Best Feature Film. I might mention, for those of you that want to get a really good hit on who Jason is, go to IMDb. He's also got a stunning and continuing acting resume. In addition to his behind-the-camera career, he's played an incredible variety of roles, which I find fascinating, among them Macbeth, Ian Fleming, Robin Hood, many more. You can find out about Tommy's Honor online, and I suggest you do that for sure. Tommy's Honor with a U, tommyshonor.com, and you can connect with Jason on Twitter at JasonJasonJCon. That's J-C-O-N. At the end, I know it's an incredibly busy time for you, Jason, and we can't thank you enough for being with us here on Talking Golf Getaways. Welcome.
No, thank you, and thank you for such a sort of illustrious-sounding introduction. I don't know that I've ever heard myself spoken so nicely about. And also, you referred to yourself as a dinosaur, but in the social media world. But I have to say, you reeled off all of those various addresses, just silky smooth there.
Well, sometimes, like you've done with Tommy's Honor, I click into a different persona, and somehow it comes out. I have no idea where it comes from.
Well, the interesting thing about it just is that I have to say, I don't remember where this happened, but I saw actually a YouTube video, and it was about someone trying to explain how all of this new system works with emails and Twitter and all of those. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen, because this guy tied himself in knots. He knew the addresses, but he had no idea how. And I have to say, I'm with him on that. I'm glad it works. And when it doesn't work, I complain very, very quickly. But the fact that it does is an anathema to me as far as understanding is concerned.
Well, I think we're with you. One of the great things about it, though, obviously, is that in previous decades, we might not have been able to share the kind of news that we can share. And certainly in the case of Tommy's Honor, with so many golfers around the world being into the history of the game, it's a way for all of us to connect around this amazing movie that you've done. And we congratulate you on the success you've already had. But I know that it's about people seeing the movie. And the obvious question a week before the release here in America, and of course, Tommy's Honor, based on Kevin Cook's magnificent book. How excited are you that it's finally here, that all the work that's gone on over the last couple of years is finally about to come to light?
Well, yes. I mean, it's an interesting emotional thing, because it's actually been 5 years since Jim Kreutzer, who gave me a call, and he was in Los Angeles at the American Film Market, and he'd spoken to a couple of people that I'd worked with, and he'd been looking for me. And I was actually, ironically, sitting in my little cottage in Scotland, about 2.5 hours drive away from St. Andrews, where the film is set. And he said, I've got this film called, this book called Tommy's Honor, written, as you say, by Kevin Cook, and would you read it? I'd be interested to know whether you'd be have any interest yourself in directing it. And so I sat down in my cottage and I read it in one sitting. And I have to say, it's interesting because I knew about Old Tom, and I feel there are many golfers around the world, even, you know, golfers of some note who have interest in the whole historical background, who know about Old Tom to an extent. You know, he was the head groundskeeper at St. Andrews for 50 years and worked for Alan Robertson in Prestwick for many years. But other than that, the story of his son, Tommy, which is quite an extraordinary story in its own way, not only a father-son relationship, but also the love story between him and his wife, Meg, and the tragedy of that story, which I won't go into so people can see the film, but it is astounding for a boy who literally, in his 9 years of playing as a professional, won the British Open 4 times, 3 times in a row, and then didn't actually play the fourth year and then won it again, winning it at 17, still the youngest, and incidentally Tom at 46 still being the oldest, so they bookend that. Quite an extraordinary and iconic family in Scotland, certainly, but I hope that this film does get seen by many people, not just golfers. I feel that it has a tremendous amount to offer universally in the sense of its themes, fathers, sons, love, class system, church. All of these things I feel are relevant. Certainly, as I was reading the book, I was drawn into the world. And although it's taken 5 years, I can't wait to sort of it's ironically, it's a little bit like having a child and your child's reached an age where they're going to leave home. So the film is going to leave home, and I wish it well. And I hope that it is enjoyed by as many people as possible, of course.
Well, Jason, you mentioned that the film is, you know, at its heart, it's a father-son family drama as much as it's a golf movie. And we know you grew up on the golf course with your father. You know, tell us a little bit about your own history with the game of golf.
Yes, I mean, I started, my dad cut off a 7-iron, and I used to sort of smack that about the place. And then I graduated up to being his caddy, which was tough on occasion. and then I started playing, and I started playing with my stepbrother quite a lot and my stepmother. My stepbrother Stefan and my stepmother Michelin, and we used to go out and play. And every year we had the most extraordinary 10 days where we would, where my father would play in this pro celebrity golf with some of the pros of the time. And I was lucky enough to watch them and on occasion meet them, and be around the game and around the people who really had a passion for it. And obviously that passion rubbed off, and I do love to play, and I like the whole idea of golf. I mean, it's incredibly frustrating because unlike something like tennis, where someone can hit the ball past you and you think, well, that was a very good shot, nobody would have got that, the ball doesn't move and neither does the pin. So the only person you can blame, unless you start blaming your clubs, is really yourself. So it can be hard, and anybody who's played golf knows that. But my sort of upbringing through that was really a one of unity and spending time, you know, essentially as well with my father. He worked very hard in his acting, and so to spend 3 or 4 hours on a golf course with him and talk about my aspirations and what I was trying to do and hear about what he was doing and what his, you know, what he thought would be good in my life. Very much as I think happens in the film. And now my son is 19. And so we have conversations like that. And so it's and various people who have come to see the film have come with their sons, it's very moving to hear them talk about. I had a man approach me with his two sons the other day at a showing we had, and at a film festival. And you know, it's a lovely thing when a family is united by something, and certainly golf has that element to it.
What a great set of recollections! I love hearing about all that. Those of you who are fortunate enough to share the game with father or mother or some family member, it's just a fantastic thing, and being able to spread it. And just for our listeners who might not be aware, your dad, Sean Connery. So there's so much that we could talk about relative to your sharing of all this with him and the game. And maybe a little bit later, we'll talk about the collaboration on Tommy's Honor, what he gave to you, what you were able to share with him. But let's talk about the golf aspect of it a little, if we can. And that, of course, revolves around St. Andrews in the movie. But it wasn't like you could just walk out on the old course. In today's world, the place that everybody who plays the game is familiar with, it was a special set of challenges and circumstances in order to be able to film the movie and to make it look the way it did when old and young Tom were in their day. Tell us a little bit about the challenge you faced in recreating the historic St. Andrews.
Yes, I mean, it was interesting because I think when I was flying over from Los Angeles, because I've been living in Los Angeles for 20 years. I only moved to New York, where I am now, 2 months ago, actually, which is a bit of a shock when it's minus 14 and 3 feet of snow. But I've enjoyed it because I grew up in Scotland, so I do know about a bit of weather. But I, on the way over from Los Angeles to Scotland to start the looking at locations, of course, I'd done a lot of research, and I was aware that the courses obviously were much less manicured. I mean, literally now the old course they have. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Very often, I think when they show the British Open, they show this sort of there's like six lawnmowers in a row, and they're all mowing at the same time in unison, and it looks like a flyby of an aircraft, you know, flying through. And they do an extraordinary job. But of course, in the time of old Tom, the courses were, I mean, they used to use sheep to keep the grass down. So slightly different, not much unity there. And so it became very apparent, not only because of the manicure of the course, but also specifically in the case of the old course, that the RNA, the Royal and Ancient, the building, has been built upon much more than back in its day, because where we set the film in 1866, and that the year before was when they actually completed the RNA building, and it was an H-shaped block, and we were very lucky because we had a good relationship with the Royal and Ancient, and they gave us the original plans to the building as it was when it was first built. And so we went looking for a field, hoping to find one that was by the sea with a similar aspect as St. Andrews. And we were lucky enough to do that. It was actually an estate called the Balcarres Estate, which had been set aside to be a links golf course. It was one of three, ironically, one being Turnberry, two being Glen Eagles, and the third was going to be Balcarres, and it was never developed. So when we turned up, there were cows all over it, and there was a lot of uneven grass and things, and so we worked on it for about a month, and we excavated some earth, and we built half the RNA, real size, which we would use to shoot practically, and then we had the other half we created digitally, and we also digitally created the Lynx Road that runs along the side. And we had the sea on the other side, which was great. Rather unfortunately, two great big oil rigs came in for maintenance right when we were shooting. So we had to digitally remove those in all the shots. But we also created the green, and we had to be very careful because we laid new sod and we didn't want it to look too new. And so we had to bed it in and we had to keep it wet. And there was a whole load of things. We had a specialist come in and help us. And we created the tee-off area, and then we dug Swilk and Burn at the end of the first hole, and we put in Swilk and Bridge. So we created that, and you know, it was wonderful and very surreal to go and drive off the beaten track and turn up in this field where there were, you know, 100 to 200 extras all wearing, you know, the garb of the day, and this half building sitting there in the middle of this in this field. For the other courses, we were lucky enough that we were able to convince a number of courses to actually not cut their grass for 2 or 3 weeks in certain holes. We had to be very specific because it was in the middle of the summer and there were a lot of people playing. But they really embraced the idea of the film. And I used the rough as the fairway and the fairway as the green. And then I still had to muck up some of it so it didn't look too well manicured. But that was, in fact, how we created the look.
I think it's interesting. You know, Mitch and I talked about this after we had seen the film, about just the rugged nature of golf in those days. And I think it's kind of timely in that Lexi Thompson just lost the first major of the year for the women, you know, based on where she marked her golf ball. And, you know, it's not an exact science. It's never been an exact science. Golf hasn't. And to watch the film and see them playing in snow and see the fist fights among the patrons who are backing different players in some of the heated matches, it's really a level of golf and a throwback to a time that a lot of people just can't even imagine these days.
Yes, I mean, to tell you the truth, that was a huge element to me that really excited me about the telling of this story, because it was really the beginning of the modern game. But these people were working class people. The matches were set up by the gentlemen, but the people that were coming to watch the matches, and indeed the people who were playing the matches, were working class people who, you know, they would go down there. It was almost pugilistic. You know, in the film, as you know, there's a very famous fist fight in a bunker. And in fact, we shot that fist fight at Musselburgh in the very bunker that it took place. And, you know, they were gambling, they were drinking, there was a lot of shouting and catcalling. And you know, in essence, the fans that were watching were standing right next to the players. They were very much apparent. And it was lovely to feel as though one was involved in sort of the beginning of something that is, I mean, I think there's 60, 70 million people that play golf today. And certainly the players had no idea of the legacy that perhaps they were leaving. But I did have fun with the extras who were working. They were all locals and they all really embraced the idea of, you know, who they were following, whether it was Mungo Park or Tom Morris or Willie Park or Tommy, and they really had a good time, and we had such, as you said, we had such diversity of weather. I mean, in the match, that quite famous match that happened in North Berwick, which is towards the end of the movie, we had 40-mile-an-hour winds. I mean, we spent quite a lot of time running after people's hats that came flying off, and beards and wigs and God knows what. And then, of course, we shot all of the snow. Now, it wasn't real snow, but it was so interesting thinking about, wow, these people were playing and they used a golf ball. They still used the gutta percha, but instead of painting it white, they left it its color, which is red. And there's evidently a famous story in one of these matches where they were playing in the snow, where a player hit the ball and it broke in half. And Tom, as the adjudicator, was asked, you know, what do I do? The ball broke in half. And he said, you have to play the rest of the hole with the bigger half. So, as you say, it wasn't an exact science by a long way.
Don't you think it's amazing that in a sport where today, if somebody clicks a camera, a player will turn around and get upset. And then you throw back to what you're talking about and the kind of scene you had in that bunker at Musselburgh.
Yeah. I know. It's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, listen, I think the game, you know, the thing with sport, and again, this is where I get so much joy out of the history of this, is that, you know, young Tommy was the first person to ever sort of, in fact, he was the first person to be a professional golfer who did nothing else. He didn't, you know, his father, you know, used to make clubs and, of course, used to give lessons and, of course, used to design courses, over 70 courses. Tommy didn't do any of those things. He basically played golf and he was a professional golfer. And in essence, he was the first one. And he was also the first touring golfer because he knew his own worth and he used to travel around the country and he would play these exhibition matches and play against people for money. And he was the first person to say, look, all of these people are coming to see me. So if I don't play, then you don't have a match. So you should pay me actually a decent amount of money, not a stipend of £5. Thank you very much. And then you guys are all making a huge amount of money. And so at that time, it was somewhat blasphemous to say something of the sort. And so, in essence, all athletes, all modern-day athletes owe it to young Tommy because he was the first person to say, look, I feel this is my worth and I think I should be paid for it. And he was, indeed.
What a great, great point to make. I think Darren and I both, when we saw the movie, that was really, I knew the story, I know Darren did, of young Tom, of his family, of his wife, of all the tragic nature of his life. But I think one of the biggest surprises was the revelation about what you're talking about how much of a renegade he was given the time and the class system that he opposed, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, again, that's a very important element to the story because, you know, Tom knew his place in society, and he played it to the hilt. You know, he was never ever allowed in the clubhouse. I mean, ironically, there's a plaque on the side of the building at the RNA of old Tom Morris, and I remember having a bit of a smile to myself because I'm thinking, well, he was head groundskeeper for 50 years, never got to go inside the club, never allowed in the club. And he's still outside because the plaque's outside. He never got in ever. And he was a member of the St. Andrews Club, which was actually on Lynx Road. It's still there. And he used to sit and have a glass of beer. And he outlived his entire family. And after his game, he would have a glass of beer, a little dog called Silver. And, you know, he outlasted his entire family, died at 86, having swum every single day in the sea, which I can tell you because I've done it and it's really cold. And that's in the summer. His death was just bizarre for a man of such stature. I don't know if you know this, but he went to go to the bathroom and he went down the wrong door and he opened the door instead of the bathroom. He opened the door to the cellar and he took a fall and that was him. But yes, the thing for me generationally about Tom and then young Tommy is I think, and I hope quite clearly depicted in the film as, you know, Tommy always asking why, you know, why does it have to be like this? Why do you do this way? And, you know, during the writing of the script, because obviously when you take a book, it's a very different language to a film. And so we had to hone the book down for the script and give it some dramatic element that was visually stimulating, hopefully, because it's a different medium. But in doing that, I remember reading a quote, and I have no idea where this quote came from, but I passed it on to Kevin and his wife, Pamela, and we were all writing the script at the same time. And it is, every new idea starts as a blasphemy. And I really believe that when someone has an idea and it's not the norm, everybody jumps up and down saying, no, how you can't do that. That's not how it is. And then over a period of time, it becomes the norm, or certainly sometimes does. And that was my thing about the gentlemen of that time. You know, they believed that that's how the world was. They weren't evil people. You know, Sam Neill, who plays Boothby, I certainly didn't want to vilify him. He just said, look, that's not how it is. And Tommy was always saying, why? And, you know, for me, the tragedy of that, of the story in a way, is that we never got to find out how many more questions Tommy had to ask.
I think all of that is obviously incredibly important. I love that quote. I love that quote. It's such a kind of condensation of what it was for young Tom. Before we let you go, Darren, you know, the show Talking Golf Getaways, we talk a lot about other golf courses too, other than St. Andrews, although Darren and I can talk about just that course probably for the rest of our lives. when you were researching the movie, did you go, and I know you have a history in the game, so you'd been around in Scotland, but did you go and go back to Prestwick and go back to places that old Tom made his mark? And actually, did you have time to go and look at that aspect of it and the other great courses that he was involved in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we were in St. Andrews quite a lot. And so the scene, the cemetery is the real cemetery, and also at the harbor when they arrive in the boat and various bits, although, quite a lot of it was also shot in a small town just outside St. Andrews called Falkland. But, I traveled to Prestwick and, I went to, various places that still, make, hickory shafted clubs, and I also there's a guy called David Joy who is quite renowned.
Oh, yes.
In St. Andrews and around.
Yeah, yes, we
I'm
know
sure
David.
Okay, so he's quite a character, and he had some, you know, wonderful stories about old Tom, and he actually wrote a book which is a sort of diary of old Tom's life, very personal kind of, with all the stuff that he's collected over the years. And it was wonderful to travel around and see the various places. I mean, of course, Tom's house is still there in St. Andrews and all the different courses. And I know Carnoustie and I know, various courses that he designed. And so, yeah, it's funny. And everybody that one talked to who was asking about the film, they all had their own little bit of snippet of information or their own personal contact somehow with old Tom. He really is quite an amazing character, and you know, for that community, for sure.
Well, we could. I know Darren and I could go on for a couple hours at least. You've been doing this and talking about this and thinking about it for so long, but we're thrilled that we've had a chance to at least peek into the world of Tommy's Honor and your connection to it. We can't thank you enough for spending this time. We're going to be doing an emergency nine with you, and maybe we can talk a little bit about those other courses and the things you love about other places in the game. But thanks for being with us, for sharing your own story and giving golfers everywhere, most importantly, for this discussion, a truly beautiful tribute to what I think, and I know a lot of people think, are the two most important central figures in our game. Thanks for being with us, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
You can find more info on Tommy's Honor, as I said, tommyshonor.com. That's honor with a U, the proper spelling, I might say. And you can connect with Jason on Twitter at Jason, Jason J. Con. That's J-C-O-N at the end. And Darren, as always, we got to thank the listeners. Couldn't do it without him.
Oh, definitely. So hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Getaways Golf. Mitch is at Mitch Lawrence, appropriately. Use Talking Golf, hashtag Talking Golf Getaways, hashtag Emergency 9. And of course, our favorite, hashtag 2 Haggis Bags to get our attention. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share us with your friends on social media, rate us on iTunes, help us spread the word about the best in golf travel.
And as we take leave, we all we want to remind you to keep looking out for and running down your dreams. Old Tom, young Tom did it. Jason Connery certainly has done it. Darren and I try to do it. And fittingly, speaking of Toms, take it away, Tom Petty. Keep running down your dream, everybody.